having one's picture taken in the mid-19th century was more of a luxury of sorts, wasn't it? It wasn't for everybody.
Wasn't for everyone, but it became a popular activity after painting and photography began in 1840, and it was an opportunity for the kind of a democratic society to open up a notion of having a likeness made by a mechanical subject such as the camera. And using the camera became available for a wide range of people to have their likeness created. So during that time period of the mid-1840s, of course, it was during the time of slavery, and there were a number of free blacks also who had an opportunity to have their photographs made.
But photographs of African Americans in the antebellum South typically objectify the subject to, well, as property, right?
Most of the photographers did at that time because they use images to create a kind of a pseudoscience that blacks were inferior, and they used photography specifically to explore that aspect in making images. But there were also a number of photographers who also opened up their studios to blacks, and they entered the studio through plantation owners, masters who had their enslaved property photographed to also show that a counter image that they were treated humanely, that they were dressed fine, and that slavery was okay, that it was a place that they could use photography as a counter narrative to the abolitionist discussion about inhumane treatment of blacks during that time. So it was used in the South in two frames.
In looking at some of the photographs in your book, it almost strikes me as here you've got a photograph of a white family, maybe a plantation family in the South. All the white members of the family are there, and then there is maybe one black servant. It almost strikes me like it's a status symbol. It's like, look at us. We can afford to have slaves.
Yes, and it could be viewed in that way as well, because we – and then also use that – that we are, she's treated humanely as she is being photographed. And so that's a way of using the experience of status as well in representing that historical narrative that changed the experience of slavery.
Use of blacks in photographs for other people's purposes was even used by the abolitionists. You have a couple of photographs in your book that juxtapose ragged slave children with well-dressed black children, a sort of before and after representation, as if African Americans' innate humanity wasn't enough to justify an end to enslavement.
The use of the photographs also showed that the ragged clothes, the raggedy clothes, but also showing them that they were worthy of freedom and education if they were dressed properly, and used the photograph to kind of multiple ways of how they engage the experience of how do we relook at the experience of slavery through dress and through education. So the photographs were used in that way also.
To what extent did the widespread distribution of photographs increase anti-slavery sentiment in the North?
I would say that it galvanized the movement, and I think that it also created a debate. And so the voice of the abolitionist movement was really important, because we have people like Frederick Douglass and Sojourner Truth. They also use their own photographs to represent their humanity and their sense of self-worth. So photographs were used in that way as a way to create this powerful image about humanity. And so they engaged a public in a different way. And I see that happen also with the anti-slavery movement, where a lot of the photographs were used specifically with a subject by the name of Gordon, who was whipped. He had whippings on his back in terms of the scars of multiple whippings on his back, but it also showed that this physical treatment had to end. And so those photographs were sold as souvenirs and postcards, and as people lectured, they used that photograph also to function as a way to stop slavery.
The carte de visite, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
The visiting card account for a good many of the images in your book. Can you briefly explain what they were?
They were carts. They were small. They were about two and 1.5-inch size. And as we have business cards today, they were also used as calling cards. But they were used, and they were also popular because they were cheaply made. You can get 6 on one plate. And so they were divided. The photographer's stamp was on the back. But they also use the abolitionist movement, and then also other opportunities arrive for people to photograph within the studio who were educators and who were ministers, use the cart to take photographs of themselves. But within the enslaved community, enslaved societies, the photographs were exchanged within masters, and so they could also use as ways of showing that their property were taken care of in a sense.
Well, the Civil War proved to be a boon for the photography business, and the depiction of blacks changed dramatically. They're now depicted as something besides slaves. They're soldiers, they're officers, they're support for the Union Army.
That was really an important one. You notice the cover of the book really was a significant find for us as we began to think about how women, the image of women, and how the soldiers were active, the Union soldiers were actively engaged with going into the photography studio, posing and sitting in front of the camera with their weapons, with their uniforms, and also with families. An important aspect of going into the photography studio during the Civil War, even though that they were camps that they were traveling photographers who had tents and created portable studios, they were opportunities to show images of men and women who were involved in their emancipation, that they were a part of the fight and that they believed in a democratic society. But the photograph on the cover of the book has an image of a young woman who was a washerwoman who worked for the Union soldiers during the Civil War period. But the fact that she's wearing a American flag, as a souvenir American flag pinned to her breast, indicates that she was, in terms of the politics of humanity, the politics of freedom, that was a part of what she believed. And I think that looking at the photographs of the Civil War soldiers and women at the time, that they used the backdrop as a way to create a different type of narrative about their social conditions and their hope for freedom.
The Emancipation Proclamation, for generations of school kids, and I'll speak from my own experience, exposure to that document, that executive order, focused on President Lincoln. Not so much the effect it had on black Americans. Juneteenth and Emancipation Day celebrations were in reality pretty important annual events in the black community for many years, weren't they?
They were, and still, and they continue to be. One of the many points for me and for Barbara, as we began to consider selecting photographs, were the Emancipation Day celebrations. As a Northerner, we rarely use this idea of celebrating in the way that we see it happen, we notice it happen in the South. And so the Emancipation Day celebrations represented a whole community of people who celebrated a tradition of their ancestors and the fight for freedom. And the photographs that the photographers documented of the celebration also included parades and pageants and music. So there was a celebration of land ownership, of business ownership, and the opportunity began as early as the first emancipation. And we read diaries where men and women wrote about hearing the celebration and hearing the cheers and seeing the celebration through the sense of pageantry, and so using that aspect of photography and the diaries of others experiencing freedom through a group celebration meant a lot to the families, and still today they experience that.
Did you find that the mood may have changed, or the depiction may have changed somewhat after the enactment of Jim Crow laws beginning in the 1890s? There was a period for, you know, several decades where, especially in the South, the condition of black Americans really sort of took a bad turn with the return of home rule, if you will. Once Reconstruction was over and the federal government exited the South, black Americans' condition in the South really took a turn for the worse, did it not?
It did, and the difficult aspect was for men and women who had no place to go, and that they were laborers, but they were also seen as vagrants because they didn't have homes. And many of them were arrested with charge of vagrancy or loitering, and they were re-enslaved or re-incarcerated, or incarcerated in a sense, where they were hired out through the government, through the state government, specifically in Tennessee and Mississippi and Florida, to build roads, build the railroads, to work in turpentine camps. So they were their body was also used as labor. So the aspect of using these families and men who had to leave their families to work, that they were basically used as a different kind of industrious work during that time period. So the difficult aspect for families that they had no man there at the to take care of them, but also the women became laundress and laundry workers and washerwomen, so they created their own home industries. So it was a constant battle and economic struggle. But the family was the significant aspect for both the men and women to keep their families together. So it was a difficult time, but also education. So we look at the work of Booker T. Washington and Mary McLeod Bethune and all of the land-grant black schools that created an atmosphere for education. And so that was a part of this trajectory. So there was a lot going on in terms of creating what did freedom look like for families after the difficult period of Reconstruction.
Many of the photographs included in your book have never been seen by the public before. How difficult was researching this material?
It was difficult and easy at the same time, because one of the experience for us that I believe that really transformed is looking at the collections that preserve photographs, such as the Library of Congress and the Smithsonian, and then in the North, looking at some of the New York Public Library images at the Schomburg, and in the South, the Atlanta History Center has an amazing collection, and the Florida Memory Collection. So there are a number of librarians and collectors are beginning to see how important that the images to be shared among a larger scholarly and lay community. So the difficulty was trying to separate and find what states we wanted to research. But then when we decided to move west in terms of our discussion, the Kansas Historical Society has a tremendous collection there, as well as the Missouri Historical Society. So the collections in Montana and in California, they began to open up as we considered the personal achievements of people who moved west, who wanted to work in different capacities as carpenters and seamstress and, you know, different opportunities as they moved west with their families.
Your book chronicles a photographic record that ends for the most part with the Depression-era WPA-sponsored photographic record of America. What about today with Facebook and Instagram? Now everyone can frame their own reality, or multiple realities, if you will. What challenges or opportunities will that present for the next generation of cultural historians?
There's an awareness that I've noticed that young people and people, just everyday people, are placing themselves in history, that their lives are important, and And I think that that's something that what I've noticed in teaching photography and listening to when I travel around the country, that there is a sense of presence, of belonging. And when we think of the past, that how photography was used in the past, it's the sense of belonging and being a part of a community. And it's going to be harder to later for historians to select images because the proliferation of images at the time. So there's a sense of curiosity that we see about families and everyday experiences, where Instagram has opened up a totally new discussion about placement and about the excitement of people's lives and about travel. So there's a new discussion that happens within society today through the photographic image.
Dr. Deborah Willis is the co-author, along with Barbara Krauthammer, of Envisioning Emancipation, Black Americans and the End of Slavery. Dr. Willis, thank you.
Thank you. This is a great opportunity to speak with you.